right here, so. Oh, we talked it. Cold topped it.
Okay. Gotta go. Yeah.
Big iron.
Oh, we shanked it. Oh, look at that line, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, boy, is he out of sync.
Welcome to the Bogey Boys podcast.
You're joined here by Mark and Kevin, and we've got a special guest here today as well.
Yeah, three-time European Senior Tour champion, David Shackley. How are we, Dave?
Good, pal, yeah. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you on. Thanks for coming. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure, boy. Pleasure.
Yeah, so this is the next part of our professional route series. We're joined by David just to talk us through his professional route, his journey. Excited to hear all about it, David. So, going back in the amateur days, when did you really start getting into golf, and what was it that got you into the game?
Well, I mean, I never really had an amateur career as such. Like most pros tend to have some form of a level of, you know, a decent level of amateur golf, if you like, you know, county or, you know, even golf club team matches or anything like that. But I'd learned to play on a field with one club, progressed to the municipals, and you know, like most people, and was fortunate enough early 80s to get into Shore Hill. I was there for about 18 months or so before I went to work at the golf club at Ormskirk. And the old pro there, Arthur, basically said, "Look, well, we'll give you 12 months, I'll teach you, see whether you like it, and I'll see whether I think you'll make it, you know, make a pro type thing." And my handicap then was 10. Never had a lesson.
Wow.
I was pretty much self-taught, to be honest. There was some good and there was obviously quite a lot of bad. So yeah. I was very fortunate in the fact that he basically, for 12 months, he just sort of said, "Look, you're not going to like me very much. I'm going to take your game to bits, basically." You know, so we started, you know, with the usual sort of the grip and all the rest of it. And as anyone who's had the grip changed, even a tiny little bit, knows.
Nightmare.
Daily, isn't it?
Not much fun, no. It's not a great deal of fun. But I was lucky, obviously, the fact that because I was at the golf club, he would send me out there every day for half an hour in the morning and the same in the afternoon, just to hit sort of 40 or 50 balls. But he would make me stick an umbrella in the ground, maybe 50 yards away from the shop, and basically said to me, you know, "I don't want to see any golf balls go past that. Just get used to holding it and swinging it fairly gently, as it were, just, yeah, you know, with wedges and things." So, obviously, when people call for lessons, and you know, the amount of times when I did eventually get into the PGA and teach at Ormskirk, about people that sort of would say, you know, "I'd like to have a lesson, but please don't touch me grip," you know. But, you know, some people, well, nowadays, some of the grips you see out on these top lads on tour, you know, I mean, back in the day when I was doing it, if someone came to you with a grip like John Rahm's or Dustin Johnson's and some of the positions they create in the backswing,
yeah,
you know, you'd have said, "Well, you can't get away, you can't do that," you know. But obviously the game's changed and there's always been more ways to do it. But
well, that's, yeah, that's a good point that you make there. So, I mean, how has that changed then over the years? Because now, like you say, there's some with a strong grip, some with a weak grip. You look how Matty Wolf swings it now. What Bryson DeChambeau's doing. But back then, what was it like?
It was, I mean, that was woods for starters. You know, no graphite around like that. I'm sure my age now, but yeah. I mean, you know, I've still got some stuff in the loft. I mean, my old boss taught me how to make one out of a block, persimmon block. In fact, I used one in the second comp I ever played was open qualifying, and I used one. And to this day, some of the holes at Ormskirk where I hit that thing with the old ball, I still don't get near it now. You know, no. It's bonkers. But obviously, I was a lot younger then. But yeah, I mean, the technology's obviously brought it on massively, but I think equally as much, you know, they're athletes, aren't they? You know, the speed and the technology they can use to monitor the speed. And, you know, I mean, you don't think you ever see Bryson hitting balls without checking every single number, yeah, on the machine, you know, before he hits another.
You can go too far with it, can't you? Like for the amateurs, if they start looking at all that, you don't know what they're looking at, do they? Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, you can get a little bit OCC. I mean, it's funny, my coach, you know, I've had some club fittings and bits. I never look at the numbers. I go off the feel off them, and I've actually, just before lockdown, the first lockdown, I work with the Sky Caddy. I use the machines out on tour, and they do a SkyTrack machine, which is, you know, for all intents and purposes, the same sort of thing as a TrackMan and all the rest of it. And I rang them and just said, look, you have to get me one of them. If I'm going to be stuck in the house for God knows how long, I want one of these machines, you know, because, I mean, it's in a ball into a net, you know. It doesn't give you great feedback, and it certainly isn't very interesting, you know what I mean? So I started to look at numbers, but I've got to be honest, I have to really sort of stop myself from getting obsessed with the speed element of it.
Yeah.
But having said that, I have worked on the speed at home. I do work on it and try things to see, is there some more speed and bits, you know, without wanting to lose the general feel of what I work on with my golf swing. But,
and lose the control, you know, and things like that.
I think it's a physical thing as well. You know, I mean, if you're a bit, you know, if you're tall and wiry, you probably, the likelihood is you probably will generate a lot of speed. You know, I'm getting older, so, you know, I've got to work hard to get some speed into it. But I'm fairly fortunate that my swing, my fault's always been actually swinging it too long. So, you know, you're always going to generate speed. I've just got to be careful that I don't end up literally with just sort of hands and arms and club head and nothing else working. But,
potentially, you know, lose that control, can't you, that way?
Is that because of Bryson you've started doing this? Like,
no, not really. I just, when I was training in lockdown, I actually, it's funny you mentioned Matt Wolf. I hurt my hand back end of last season. I hit a rope on the range and damaged my wrist. I actually didn't really realise how badly I'd hurt it when I was at the tournament at the time. But later, day, sort of 2 months later, I was out in Portugal. And prior to going to, I got an invite to a Champions Tour event in Morocco. And I went out there and from Portugal. And I've been playing lovely. I shot 5 under 5 under the last two rounds of the Pro-Am. So I went there thinking, oh, can't wait for this. And it just, I played with David Frost on the Tuesday, because we'd already arranged to meet up and have a game. And I ate it really nice. And then on the Wednesday morning when I got up, it was like, that's sore. And long story short, it basically almost gave up on me that week, but I got drawn with John Daly last round, so there's no way of pulling out. I played pretty poorly, but having said that, I wasn't generating speed. I was in pain. I was scared of it and all the rest. But I went to see a guy who scanned it and had a look at it. And basically, he said the tendon had swollen that much on the underside on my left wrist. I thought I'd broken a bone, but it was annoying it because it was bubbled out so much. Yeah. It was basically making contact. It was just, you know. And he's a very, very keen low handicap. I mean, plus figure handicap golfer, and he's been to see George Gankis, who coaches Wolf, doesn't he?
Yeah, I know George. Yeah.
And he was explaining to me, I was explaining to him what positions were giving me problems on my backswing, and he just said, have a look at this guy, and I'd never heard of him. Anyway, I went and had a look, and obviously then the Wolf thing came up, and I went to sort of sit down and chat with my coach, Simon Edwards, and just said, look, I was just struggling midway back on the backswing with a position that we'd worked on for sort of 2.5 years, setting the wrist quite early. And that was straining the position. So I've sort of been adapting it a little bit. And I'm not going to say I'm swinging it like Matt Wolf, because I'm not. But it feels an awful lot freer and I'm hitting it further. So, you know, there is something in it. But, there's more than one way to do it, that's for sure.
More than one way to swing it, definitely, yeah.
Well, just talking back a touch, Dave, when you were coming up in the, obviously when you're saying 80s and 90s, was it? Was there any feeder tours going up? How did you actually get involved into?
Well, I registered back then when I first started doing it. Basically, the first thing was register and join the PGA and get your qualifications with the PGA. I mean, Arthur basically said to me, if you get your exams done, then you can, you'll always be, or you can, if you want, you can always be involved in golf some way or other, whether it be as a club pro, a coach, a player. Well, you've always got the qualification there behind you. So
Yeah.
He made that pretty obvious. You know, don't go into it dreaming that you're going to win the Open. You know, get the qualification and crack on from there, which is what I did. And as it happened, he retired and Jack Hammond came to all. I was still at Ormskirk then. And he encouraged me to play more. He basically said, you know, you're too good to be sat in a shop all the time. You should get out there. And he pushed me and encouraged me to go. And he had a different sort of more modern way of looking at golf, if you like. Arthur brought me up on Hogan you know, the modern fundamentals and all the rest of it. So it was sort of a progression of how golf, you know, the evolution of golf had come from Jack, because all I'd ever known, first lesson and only lessons I'd ever had were off Arthur at the time. So, yeah, he pushed me to play, and I played the region and the PGA, you know, and the counties and bits and bobs, and had a little dabble at tour school after a few years. But I wasn't ready for it, really. But I got through to the final stage, and at the time thought nothing of it. But you do learn things from it. And in fact, you probably, it's an hard lesson to learn, but you learn almost more, because you're gonna lose more than you win.
Yeah.
But you do learn. You may not initially realise you're learning stuff, but you do. You know, and it's those sort of things that learning why you've lost is probably how you learn how to win, if you like. Certainly, that's what it felt like to me.
Learn from your experiences, yeah.
That's a club, that. We might get that up on our wall.
So you spoke there briefly about the wooden golf clubs and the golf balls and things like that. So obviously you've been through the full change then, I take it.
Yeah,
What springs to mind to you when you talk about, obviously, as the technology's changed from the wooden clubs to the new golf balls, more layers on the golf balls, what has it generated, more distance, like you said before, or is it?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I always remember, as I say, when Jack Allen became my boss at Ormskirk, that was the first time I ever saw a tailor-made metal wood. And a graphite shaft to go with it, you know. I mean, never seen it. Well, I'd seen the odd sort of black one that somebody might have had, that, you know, the standing joke, everyone, they were like a piece of licorice, and they were like a joke club almost when you look back at them now. But straight away, they were, I mean, the strange thing was they felt big, you know, and you look at them now, they're like, they're almost like a rescue club.
Tiny,
you know?
But
gradually, sort of the Callaways came along and it progressed. And then I think the thing that most people probably do, they hear it said all the time on the TV, but the ball evolved just as much as the technology in the clubs, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I remember getting a Yonex graphite head, but it was a longer shaft than standard. I can't remember the length of it, to be honest. But I remember saying to Jack, can I have a go with this, put some sellotape on it, you know, and out we went. And he just said to me, you've got to buy that. It was just like nothing had ever, you know, how far it was going. It was unbelievable. And I think, to be honest, that probably back then was as long as I think I ever got. I'd have been about, I don't know, 22-ish, something like that. But, I mean, we still chat and laugh about it now down at the golf clubs, you know. Oh, do you remember when you hit it there? And do you remember, you know, it doesn't seem possible to me now, and the technology is better, but I'm older. But
maybe you need to get it back in the bag.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to
say that you were the pioneer of the 48-inch driver then.
Well, I don't know how long it was, to be honest. I'm sure if you look it up, you'll probably find out, but it felt enormous. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. How did it feel as well? Because obviously you're a pro golfer, you obviously know how to hit the ball. So as the technology is growing, and is it completely different, the feel of hitting a golf ball now compared to then?
The strange thing was, and obviously they don't do it anymore, but they were trying everything, obviously, to, you know, to come out with something new. Everybody wanted it, this kind of thing. So obviously the metal ones felt so different to the persimmon. And strangely enough, a few years down the line, when the Onyx and then a few others consequently started making them out of graphite, the heads actually felt more towards the wood again, because they weren't as hard often.
Yeah.
I know it sounds strange. Yeah. I felt like they felt softer again, but, you know, I mean, as it happens, that really the graphite woods never really took off, to be honest, the heads such. They now use them in the back for the weight of them, don't they?
Yeah.
Well, they did do for a while, but... the metals that they're using now, are, you know, and there's all kinds of stuff, isn't there? But I mean, as I say, the ball, like getting a ball that went a long way. If you got a ball that went a long way back then, it didn't stop.
Yeah.
You know, and if you had one that stopped, it didn't go a long way. That's how it seemed to feel anyway. But yeah. Obviously now, that with all the computers and everything they've got now to analyse things, the optimum sort of launch angles, spin rates, you know, they go so deeply into it, you know, that they really are absolutely on the limit really now. Although yeah. when you said that, you'd have thought they were on the limit, and then Deshaun Bowes now in it where he's in it. So
be interesting to see how it does in the Masters, won't it? With all this going on.
You know what? I've got to say, it's going to be interesting. I can't wait to just see if he is in it in places that they're saying, is it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think equally. I was listening to him today and I was thinking, he's having a bit of a mind game here with everyone, just saying he's what he's doing all this. Like, he's talking about aiming for the 14th fairway from the 13th because there's no fans, knocking it right through. I was thinking, you're probably just going to stand up in a 3-wood.
I think as well, for argument's sake, say he does. It works for him and he wins, and you know, maybe wins handsomely or whatever. I can't wait to see what Augusta looks like in April.
Yeah,
they'll do something to it.
If
he does that to it, they'll change it.
Yeah,
I'm sure they will. But listen, fair play to the guy. I mean, you know, love him or loathe him, he's pushing it, and you know, no one said it about Woods when he did it, did they?
No, this is it. And as I say, it keeps the game interesting and it keeps us talking.
It keeps us absolutely. It keeps us talking. I think it's. I think I'm interested to see what he does here because I mean we've all watched Augusta all our life, haven't we?
Of course.
But I do think you know the sort of bombing it and then gouging out the rough with a sandwich and not being penalised for being in the rough. I think that's sort of spoiling it a bit, I've got to be honest. Coming down the stretch, if someone's in the lead and they hit it in the rough in the US Open, normally they were in trouble, weren't they?
They weren't bothered.
You know, what was it? I think Wolf shot about 6 or 7 under on the third round of the US Open. And I think he hit 3 fairways.
Yeah, well, he had a comfortable lead, didn't he? I think he was like 3 ahead going up to the back nine. It was only just sort of...
You know, I mean, if you were on that golf course and hit it in the rough, you know, or only hit 3 fairways, you'd do well to break 100.
Yeah.
Chipping outside, yeah. Aren't you?
Oh, yeah. It's incredible. I was looking to get in the USPGA seniors last year, and it was at Oak Hill where they had the Ryder Cup. And I was talking to Rocco Media on the practice round, hitting balls next to him, and he said to me it was as close as he'd seen to a US Open setup for a long time, you know. And there was guys, you know, I've only ever seen that on the TV where they run over with a flag, you know, and stick a little wire flag in the floor.
So you don't lose it, yeah.
And that was 2 steps off a fairway, you know.
Ridiculous, yeah.
It was brutal.
Full punishment.
Well, even he's a long way back. You can't get a 6-iron out of it, you know. It's all right, you've hit 340.
That's where the punishment comes, yeah. So talking about your career then, just talk us through, obviously, your playing career. You've turned pro in the late 80s, early 90s. And as you say there, you've played a lot of PGA North events. How did your career progress in the early stages as a professional? Was it more the teaching side or as a player?
I did a bit of both, really. I mean, I always felt like I wanted to play. And I did give lessons and, you know, didn't do tons, but I did a fair few. But as I say, Jack encouraged me to play. And back then there was a really fairly strong sort of pro. I'm seeing, you know, Lancashire and in North Region. And, you know, there was something, one or two things at minimum, a week minimum. So, you know, once I sort of got my foot on the ladder in the region and got into the pro-ams, I loved it. I loved playing. The money was all right for one day events. You know, it was more than you'd make tinching in a week when you won.
Yeah,
way more. And I've got to say, once I started winning, I loved it. You know, and you know, I always felt like I could sort of win more and win more. And then you do. I don't know what the word is. It sounds arrogant, but you get used to winning, perhaps.
Yeah.
How much money, but how many like events were you? Were you just turning up every week and winning? Like
I was probably winning. Not early on. Don't get me wrong. Not early on. I mean, when I left Ormskirk, I was about 28. I started basically playing. That was all I had. didn't have an internet. So, you know, that took a little bit of a while to get used to, because obviously if I played poorly, I didn't make any money. But once I sort of managed to push the numbers and the money out of it and concentrate on the golf again, I would get, I don't know, anywhere between 15 and 25 wins a year on the region, probably, in pro-ams and stuff. I mean, I was banging a lot of it. I mean, there was a few of us doing it, but, you know, we were always at the same names were at the top of the order of merit, same names were at the top of the money list. It's quite ironic. I mean, even playing now, I mean, still, the names that are up there when I come back and play them, they're still, a lot of them are still there, which is, you know, I mean, I won the order of merit my first year out on the seniors 2 years ago. Just happened that the Order of Merit events were on weeks when I wasn't out on the tour. And I won the Order of Merit and I was 51.
Amazing.
Was there no Euro Pro or like that you could progress during them days?
There was no Euro Pro after. I'm not sure what sort of years it, because when it first came out, it was MasterCard, wasn't it? MasterCard, it was called. The MasterCard Tour, it's the same thing. But there was a thing called the Hippo Tour and the Futures Tour. I won the Futures Tour Championship at Formby Hall, funny. I remember winning that. But they were the MasterCard or Euro Pro as is now. The problem with them, the MasterCard when it first started was pretty good because the entry fees were quite low, you know, and but obviously the travel side of it came in. But now it's an expensive thing to do if you're not getting in the top 10. The purse, unfortunately, throwing 10 grand first prize at it looks great for the TV, but it's not great for the guy who's finishing 8th, 9th, or 19th. They're losing money. So it's an hard way to progress. I mean, fair play to the lads that do it. And there's some good ones come through that way. You know, I mean, Happened, did it, didn't he? And whatever. Yeah. But there's a lot of miniatures. I mean, 1836, so I played a lot on there, played a hell of a lot on it. It's funny, a lot of the lads that don't go down the PGA route play these sort of mini tours. And there's some real good players playing on them that see that more of a stepping stone to then go for Challenge Tour and that, you know, all the rest of it. So
yeah, and that's the main tour, yeah.
You know, because it's like I say, I mean, if you're I don't know what it averages out at, but let's say it averages at sort of six or seven hundred quid a week on the Euro Pro.
Yeah.
You know, you've probably got to make not near on top 10 to get your money back, probably.
We have. We've spoken about this. We've done a couple of these series and a couple of lads we've spoken to who are doing that. They're on the Euro Pro. They say, like you've just said there, you need a top 7 finish to break even.
It's tough. I mean, when I was doing what I was doing in the region and winning the Order of Merit and this, that and the other, every year I won it, they offered me exempt status on it and I never took it. Never. No.
What was the reason for that?
You can't make any money at it.
Yeah.
You know, I could go down, I don't know, to Prince's or you name it, anywhere that was, you know, overnight stays and all the rest of it for 3 or 4 days, if you like.
Yeah.
Play really well. And as you say, come back not making any profit. You know, I could go down the road 3 times that week to Pro-Ams and finish top 5 in them all and make over 1,000 quid, maybe more. You know, it's a no-brainer. You know, at the end of the day, as much as I wanted to, you know, see how far I could go with it, you've got to live, you know. And unless you've got somebody bankrolling you, which I never had, it's tough, you know. And you've got to. It's sometimes people might look at it as a bit of a lack of ambition. You should be having a go at this. You should be on that tour. But sometimes you've got to pick and choose where you go, you know. Yeah. And it's not always about, I want to be on that tour, I play that tour. It's all well and good saying I'm on the, you know, I'm on the Europe. How are we going on? Well, I finished 35th in the Order of Merit. Now, no one would know what that means, but that means you're broke.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? Definitely.
It's when optimism, you have to turn optimism into realism, don't you?
You do, yeah. You do. And, you know, I wouldn't ever tell anybody not to chase a goal and a dream on it, you know, at any level, whether they're first starting or whether they're coming up to being 50, because You never know. But unless you've been and seen how good some of these lads actually are, it's very hard to, you know, actually equate how good they are, because they're not doing it on the club golf course that they play every week. You know, I mean, obviously, and as you go up the levels, it's harder and harder and harder. And you know, when I was fortunate through the PGA to get in things like Wentworth and qualify for a couple of Opens, you know, you realise how good are these lads shooting these numbers around here? You know, some of the hardest courses at the time I'd ever been on.
Well, that's what we want to speak to you about the first Open that you played. And was 1998, wasn't it? The Birkdale Open.
Yeah. How was
that for you then? With obviously the year before, a certain Tiger Woods comes on the scene and wins the Masters, and he turns up. Yeah. You're obviously a local lad. I'm not sure whether there was other local lads that year who played in it as well. But did you have a lot of support there? And how was that with the media attention? With, I imagine everything was all Tiger Woods this, Tiger Woods that, was it?
Yeah, well, yeah, I think you were. I mean, to be honest, I got caught up in it because I got a hell of a lot of local attention, you know. So the Tiger Woods thing, I wasn't really that much aware of it. You know, I mean, obviously, normally, you know, as I'm going to do, like everyone's going to do tomorrow, I'm going to plonk myself in front of the TV and watch every hour of coverage of the Masters. And I used to get up. That was the one great thing about the Open. The coverage used to come on dead early in the morning, didn't it? So I'd get up and I would sit there until it went off. But obviously, when you're in it, you don't do any of that because you're there. But it was, hell of an experience. I had played at Wentworth, so, you know, I mean, that obviously that gave me some sort of an insight, as it were. But you then step up to a thing like that and... It's funny, I've never really given Woods a second thought, and I don't mean that like, you know, who's he?
Yeah, of course.
I hadn't really thought about it until we were there, and a mate of mine, Staz, was caddying for me, and I just said to him, let me know when he turns up. I just wanted to see him hit a ball, really.
Yeah.
That was all, you know, that was all I wanted, and my idea at the time was, I'll wait till he's hitting a few and then I'll wander over and see, you know. So I just said, tell me where he is, where he goes. And his caddy came down and dumped the bag down, and he didn't arrive for probably another 40 minutes. And I've been hitting balls for quite a while. And when he did eventually turn up, he was probably only about 30 yards, 20 yards from where I was actually already hitting balls. So I thought, oh, you know, in for a penny. So I moved and went next to him. And, just tell me when he's got a driver out, and then pretended to clean a club. So I'm now stood right next to him, as you would on a tee, as it were.
Yeah,
and never saw the first three balls because obviously it's going that fast. Where you would normally pick it up in your eye line. I'm looking at McCarty saying, "Did you see that?" And we couldn't. And it was only when you started to look further ahead that he caught where it was going, and he was on the left-hand corner, farthest left-hand end, and he was hitting it over the fence on a diagonal from left to right. I couldn't get near the fence in a straight line. He was flying it. You know. It was an incredible, incredible thing. I just thought, well, I might never get this chance again. But, yeah, amazing, amazing to see it. You know, like so many of us, no one had seen it before. I remember talking to Monty at Wentworth about it. Actually, the year before at Wentworth, and he'd been watching it on the TV from the States. I don't know what event was on. We were at Wentworth, and he was just talking on the range, and I happened to shimmy into the conversation, uninvited sort of thing.
Yeah.
But to listen to Monty talk about Woods was the way I would have talked about Monty, as it were.
Yeah.
To think the best player at the time, and Monty won the Order of Merit, I don't know how many times on the top at that point. He was in awe of the guy and what he was doing, and he was the best we had.
Wow!
So obviously, I thought I've got to go and have a look when I got in at Birkdale. But it was quite a strange thing to see where you can't pick a golf ball up, you know. And funny enough, I remember we were sat in the locker room on the Friday, and he did. I think it was the Friday, and he hit his shot into the 15th par 5, and we were sat watching the TV, and Retief Goosen had come in looking at the TV as Woods was hit this iron onto the green, and Retief turned around to him and said, "Is that his third shot?" I said, "No, it's his second." And he just looked at me and he said, "It's not fair, that is it?" And I thought, you know, well, it's not just me then.
Yeah.
You know, But that's how different he was back then, 98. You know, it's, you know, I'm just, funny enough, just glancing at the TV there. Just John Bowes just launching them down the range now. So, he's doing it again, isn't he?
That's it, yeah.
So, you know, you're at Wentworth there.
Yeah, I got in it three times. That.
Yeah, how did you end up qualifying for that?
Through the region. Back then, early 90s and what have you, if you were a top one or two in the region, you got in. There was about, I think the PGA had about 18 or 20 spots, something like that. I can't remember how it was. Quite a lot.
Yeah.
Sometimes three got in. And gradually over the years, they give them all back, and I think there's only about one or two get in it now. But I was lucky enough to do it. I think I did it three times. So, yeah, it was great. I mean, I never made the cut, which is the only annoying thing. Funny enough, the best round there was my first one. I birdied the last for one under first round, and I felt like running around the green, high-fiving everything. it was after that, I couldn't get around the golf. I couldn't play it.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to say it just didn't suit me. I don't think it was good enough, to be honest with you. But it's very difficult when you get chucked in. That's your one goal. I always used to come away from things, even the Open Championships and things, and think, if I had 20 goals at this, 25 goals, if I knew I was going somewhere else, and then the week after, you know, and lots of people say that, but at the end of the day, you've got to earn your right to do it, haven't you?
Yeah. So saying that, then how did you manage your schedule then? Is it how much preparation do you get for those type of events? Or is it, right, your first or second, 2 weeks to go, now you're in the PGA, or do you get given some time?
When it was back then, if you'd won the Order of Merit, it was from the previous year.
Okay.
So you knew you were going to be going. Whether that's a good thing or not, I don't know, because you just can't, you know, but... It's a hell of a thrill. It's a great thrill. You know, if you get a few people down there who you know and get some of your mates down and what have you, it's a great experience. And the Opens, even, I mean, I was dreamland at getting in at Birkdale, first one, and 20 minutes down the road, you know, crazy.
How did you qualify for the Open?
I did all the qualifying, actually.
Oh, did you?
Where did I go? I brought the course record at Stockport. That was the first one.
Quality.
And that was great because I played fairly early and I just came home. I thought there's no point, no one's going to beat that. And I come home and there was actually a qualifier at Ormskirk and I still worked there at the time. Oh, no, I didn't. I'd left. But I used to have a parrot and I went home and got me a parrot and took it down to the home qualifier at Ormskirk. And they ended up having to go in the shop because the bird wouldn't stop whistling and shouting. Yeah,
fantastic.
We went to, I was drawn at Southport and Ainsdale, and everyone turned up on the Sunday, and I played awful, shot four over, and I was out, I don't know, very early on the second day, on the Monday, and it was blowing a gale, and I went down the practice ground with a mate of mine who was carrying, Stazzy was carrying for me, and another lad, Richard, came just to watch, and there was only us on the range. There was nobody there, and I was hitting wedges at him. He was catching them, and the ball was moving 25 yards in the air. It was that windy, and in the end, I was hitting him so good, I was making him move to get a ball. I had a bet with Richard that I could get one in the bag, and I was hitting the bag, the little practice bag, from about 115 yard or something.
Yeah.
And but there was nobody else there, and I thought they've called it off. And I went back up to the clubhouse at SNA and called one of the R&A guys and said, has it been postponed or whatever? And he said, No. It was early.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to save a bit of face, really, because I'd shot four over on a lovely afternoon, you know, the day before. And I just want to, you know, make myself feel a bit better, really. And I remember standing on that first tee in a 2-iron about 4 foot in the air, just as hard as I could. And I made two at the first. And I played lovely all the way around. And I had a birdie putt at the last to shoot 2 under. And that'll save me, you know, me blushes next time I go in the boozer, basically.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I knocked it in and then we went and sat in the clubhouse and had some breakfast and a couple of pints and more pints, and then people were coming off the course sort of saying, he's, you know, he's 9 over after 12 and he's 14 over and he's, and and their scores kept coming in, and it was just absolutely bizarre. And then it suddenly sort of dawned on me that I might have to play off here. So I stopped drinking and went and had I remember going to the putting green thinking, oh no. it was, I think there was, back then, they all had to come and qualify. You know, it wasn't like it is now. I think we had about 13 spots.
Yeah.
A lad I was stood with on the putting green knew the caddy, one of the caddies that was in the last group. And there was only them coming in. There was three to come in. And I think one of them could have done it. And this bloke knew his caddy. And as we were still on the green, he was like, you know, waving at him and all the rest of it. And he gave it one of these. Yes, and it was exactly the number got in. There was no playoff, which was a hell of a relief to me.
Yeah. What was that? Straight
on the pints.
I'm going to say back in there on the pints.
Well, yeah, but it was strange because obviously then it used to be Sunday, Monday, and then, so Tuesday morning I was at Birkdale registering.
Right.
You know, now, well, the next time I did it, which was years later in 07,
yeah,
I, funny enough, did very similar, rubbishy first round and broke the course record in the second at Montrose, and then I had to come home for a week or whatever it was and then go back.
Yeah, Carnoustie, wasn't it, in 07?
How did you find that, like going straight into it or waiting a week? What was better?
I don't know, really. I wasn't playing very well when I went to the quad. I don't know how I qualified, I've got to be honest. But I just had one of them days. And when I came home, I don't know. I suppose I was on a bit of a high. Well, you're on a high, aren't you? So I was hitting balls and thinking, yeah, it's all right, this. And then when I got up there, that was blatantly obvious that I still didn't know really what I was doing. And I played with Brody and Pete Bakes. They got me, they said, oh, we'll have a game. I said, oh, brilliant. And you know, me and Bakes are taking you on. I said, well, that's not fair. You know, two Ryder Cuppers onto me. No, no, I've got your partner. And onwards, up to the team walks Miguel Jimenez.
Wow.
He was my partner. So yeah, it was great. We had a great laugh. And we lost and he was rubbish.
he was,
funny enough, I had a laugh with him about it because I played with him in Benidorm a few years before in one of our events, and I've seen him around, and he always comes over and has a chat. But Brody said to me just after we'd handed the money over, he just said, just watch that leaderboard in the morning, and sure enough, I was hitting balls on the right, and there his name was on the leaderboard. I thought, yeah, but to be honest, it was. Then it was one of the most enjoyable days I've ever had. It was brilliant, and he was so nice. And he's still—he's just a genuinely nice guy, you know.
Yeah, it does come across like that. Yeah,
good fun, real good fun.
And, I met him. I used to work at a golf event in Spain, and I met him a couple of times. But he loves a pint and a cigar, and that, doesn't he? So he's out with everyone.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, I got thrown with him in Benidorm in my first year, and funny story actually that Stazu caddied for me at the Open, a few of my mates all without letting me know arranged for like a 4-day trip to Benidorm when the event was on, and never told me. So I'm walking around to the first tee, and I won't repeat what the shout was, but I turned around because someone had called me a name. And the worst that's on the wall behind the first tee. It was absolutely bizarre. So they walked around with us, and I played nice. I don't know whether I shot about 300 or 400 or something. And I just said, right, I'll see if I can get you upstairs, you know, on the veranda.
Yeah.
Right. I said, just let me go and do the scorecard. Anyway, I come back out, and no sign of them. And I'm looking around, no sign. So I'm starting to text, like, you know, I hope you haven't gone, because you know, I might well be, you know, get you up here with me. And they won't go over the back. They're already up there. I don't know how they got in there. So it was the first time I'd seen him since I'd won in Russia. So we had a few too many. And the next morning, I had to go to the physio to get a bit of one of these rehydration things. She was like, you do know you're playing with him in this. I said, oh, man. But It was great. We had a great laugh. And he had his photo with him and all the rest. So they were delighted. Second round, they walked around with him, and he's a friendly guy. He was good.
Yeah,
we had a great week out there. But I saw him in Morocco actually come over, because obviously I was struggling with my hand. He come over asking me how I was getting on and whatever. But he's some character. He's another one who doesn't swing it normal.
Yeah. So you mentioned there about obviously the European Seniors Tour and the success you've had on there. So just talk us through the build up to that. Obviously, how that come about, because I understand you just missed out in 2017 in a playoff, didn't you? And then obviously 2018 is when you get your card. So just talk us through the differences, between and what you found going into the European Seniors Tour and how that.
I mean, through my 40s, I was still doing all right in the region and. But I was playing quite a lot of the 1836, and a lot of the lads then were in it further than me. Funny enough, I played quite a lot with Marcus Armitage on it, and I was still doing all right. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to have a go at this. And so I had a chat with Simon Edwards and just said, look, can we do something proper? Because we used to room together and play against each other all the time, but if I was struggling, I'd say, just have a look at this. You know, he'd give me 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there, but nothing official or we never actually arranged for me to go and see him to have a lesson or anything. I just said, look, if I'm going to have a go at this series, I want to have a proper go.
Yeah.
So he put a plan together, you know, as Simon does, and I went with it because I had every confidence in what he was telling me, although it was a little bit of a change of swing and what have you, but, you know, obviously it's proved like the right things he had in mind have worked. And yeah, we worked very hard through that winter, off season, ready for first go at school, and probably a little bit naively. I don't know, maybe it was just overconfident. But I did think that if I play like I'm playing, I'll get my card.
Yeah.
But it's only when you start to get there and you realise, actually, 5 cards is really pretty tough. You know, I don't think there's any other tour school, perhaps. There may be, I could be wrong there, but 5 seemed. When you suddenly see how many people are there, and I had to again pre-qualify and then final qualify, but yeah, I mean, losing in a playoff was the lowest point ever.
Was
to
it?
A point where, I mean, I can't really put it into words, to be honest with you. It's just a real horrible thing, and the worst thing probably was all the text messages and what have you, you know, all commiserating and quite a lot congratulating, because, you know, it's a great performance, you know, even though, you know, this, that and the other. But a lot of people hadn't realised that I wouldn't get any starts. A lot of people assumed that, you'll definitely get some events.
Yeah.
Which would have been a lot easier to take, you know, but they were the rules that were set out before we entered. And, you know, I knew that. I knew there was 5 cards and that was it. You know,
but you were in a playoff for the fifth, for the last spot.
Yes, there was 3 of us for the last spot. I bogeyed the last one for it. I needed a par the last to get my card and I bogeyed it. Jean-Pierre Salat rolled this ridiculous curly put on the first playoff hole, and that was the end of that type thing. And I hit good shots. I didn't feel like I gassed it. I didn't feel like the bottle went. But it was just one of those things. It wasn't meant to be. And, you know, he made a good birdie and that was that. And I had to sort of get back up and have another go with, you know, at the region and bits and bobs. And I just, I've gone out of it, I've got to be honest.
Did it really just knock your confidence and everything that did it then,
I didn't really. I just started playing awful. You know, and... Andrew Duncan from who was running Lancashire PGA, he said to me, late July, you know, we've got you back now. I won something, I think, in July, late July, and he said it took you this long to be like yourself at an event, you know, and have the crack and take the mickey and all the rest, you know, which is what I normally, you know, and.
Yeah.
Said, you've just not been the same. I said, well, you know, you're not aware of it, are you? You know, I certainly wasn't. But by the end of that summer, with the prospect of not a lot of golf coming up and, you know, having not really had a very good year at all, I weren't working for UPS. Just sort of stick the clubs in the cupboard and we'll leave it at that. And it was my wife that made me go.
You were going to quit golf, was you, at that point?
I don't know if I was going to quit. I don't know if I was going to quit.
Yeah.
But I certainly wasn't having another go.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel like I could justify spending the money to have another go.
Yeah.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but did you almost feel like you were there in 2017?
And then
you bogeyed it, then you've lost in the playoff, and then...
I did, and I remember vividly every event watching the scores. You know, and I'll hold my hand up. And I know John, who won the playoff, but I watched his score at every event. But it's inevitable you're going to do that, you know.
Yeah.
But you never know how you're going to perform, you know. I mean, I don't know I didn't know at that point what it was like out there and, you know, what kind of a standard is it, you know, what the courses are like and all the rest of it. I knew I'd nearly got on the tour, but, you know, it's like anything. It's like if you get through the European Tour school, you know, it may be a little bit more now, but certainly, you know, for our era, very few people were coming out on a tour school and then hitting the ground running and contending week in, week out. I knew the players' names and watched them all their life on the TV.
Yeah.
So when I went back, as I say, I hadn't really done much, I've got to be honest. And I don't know whether maybe the lack of expectation perhaps changed the way I played, I don't know. But I was playing great and I was leading after two rounds. And I remember in the third round, I'd started on the 10th. And when I came round, I think I birdied the second and the third. And then he had two really good holes. And I think I had a three or four shot lead at the time.
Yeah.
And I made a bogey at the hard par four, which I thought was fair enough. And then I knocked it on the wrong level on this par three and I four-putted it. Mm. And I suddenly dropped three shots. And then we had a bit of a walk to the next tee. And it was strange. I thought, well, he's probably still leading. You know, everything in my mind was telling me, panic.
Yeah.
You know, but I think with all the experience and everything else, something from somewhere inside my head, I suddenly thought, you're still leading. There's no point in dwelling on the fact that you're not leading by three or whatever, yeah? But you're probably still leading. You know, if someone had said you can be leading, you know, with sort of four holes of the third round to go, you'd take it, wouldn't you? Because you're in with a shout, you know. The only thing was I had 8 and 9 or 9 and 10, whatever it was, I can't remember. I think it might have been 9 and 10. The shotgun started on the 11th, but there's two really good holes, and I hit a 7 iron to a foot on my 17th hole.
Yeah.
And then I hit a 4 iron to a foot on my last, and all of a sudden came off feeling like I'd, you know. All the stuff before hadn't happened, if you like.
Yeah, exactly. The complete opposite of the feeling.
And I think it also probably gave me that little sort of light bulb where you think, yeah, you know, you can handle it. Because a lot of people, and you know, and a lot of maybe occasions down the line in the years I've played, if that had happened to me, right, well, I panicked.
Yeah.
And bogeyed another two or three of them last few holes. And then suddenly being in a really... you know, position where I was struggling to get back up there, if you like. So it was, I mean, it was strange, but, you know, amazing feeling to suddenly go back to that same hotel 12 months down the line. And funny enough, stand in the middle of the 18th in exactly the same spot needing a four to get my card and doing it.
Yeah.
It was probably as good a feeling as anything, I've got to be honest. So I've sort of had the worst feeling in the world the year before to the best. But I think it was the fear of what had happened to me that probably made me any kind of nerves under right down the stretch and under the cosh. I got annoyed. I got aggressive. Not to a point of being aggressive in the shots as such as, you know, I'm going to take that flag and I'm going to go for this, I'm going to go for that.
Yeah.
I was sort of giving myself a real stern talk that you are going to hit it in that part of that green and you are going to hit it down this side of this fairway. And the focus level the fear wasn't there. It was sort of you will do this type thing. And again, probably learned an awful lot during that week, you know. And then obviously just sat at home contemplating what was about to come and going to. But funny enough, then thinking, well, come on, I've got to do all my plan all my flights and stuff. I've never had to do that really. I've been abroad and played abroad, of course I have, but
yeah,
I've never had a schedule and stuff like that. You know, it was very exciting, I've got to be honest.
So how was that for you then? Obviously, you've got yourself a schedule now, and obviously we'll talk about the August 2018 win. But up to that point, how was the tour for you?
The first one was in Dubai, Sharjah, out of Dubai way. And it was great. I had Harry Connolly, used to work a bit in the shop at Mossack, asked me if he could come.
I'm related to him.
Are you?
Yeah. He's my mum's cousin. It's his kid.
Ah, right. Well, he's a great man.
Yeah.
He asked me if he could come. And I just said, well, you know, my first event, I can't, you know. And he said, no. He said, I'll pay for my flight. I just love to come and see it and caddy for you. Mm-hmm. So I looked into it. I thought, well, yeah, brilliant. If you wanted to, you know, I'd love to have you there, because that helped me a lot, actually, because, you know, I didn't know what kind of a caddy I would get. And, you know, it was one relief or one worry, if you like, that was had already gone. I had someone to travel with, someone to talk to, and we sort of went on it both not really knowing what was sort of going to happen. But we had a great week, and I played pretty awful. It was a 9-hole course, but with different tees, but it was over 7,000 yards. And
where is this, sorry?
It's called Sharjah. It's half an hour, 20 minutes from Dubai. And great little track. But when I say little, it's not little. It feels little because you play it twice, but it's not. Yeah. It's, as I say, I was surprised it was 7,000 yards. You know, I thought they played like 6,000 yards on the seniors. But so it was very evident straight away that, you know, there was people reaching some of the par fives. I'm thinking, I can't reach that. Am I going to be out of my depth here? Is it going to be hard work? And I played about, I don't know how many holes it would have been. It wasn't far short of halfway of the tournament, if you like, about 25 holes or something into the event. And I made a swing off a par four and just thought, oh, that's it. Because I've been struggling. I was over par. And from then on in, I played lovely. I had one little bit of a hiccup down at 18, but managed to get away with the most outrageous bogey you've ever seen. And then played lovely again the last round. I finished 18th, and I went home so delighted with myself that I'd made top 20.
Yeah,
and it gave me a lot of confidence, to be honest. And then a mate of mine, Ash, came out and did Denmark caddy for me out there, which again helped, you know, having someone with me. But I knew a lot of them out there anyway.
Yeah,
from over the years. But when you're traveling, it's always nice to have a crack with somebody, you know. And I hurt me back in Denmark, eating too many balls. And then I sort of played fairly average, I've got to be honest. But I was putting too much pressure on myself and watching the leaderboards and this, that, and the other. And then we played at the London Club, the Stacio PGA Championship, 72 holes. And Si Edwards came down. He was refereeing, actually. So when he'd done his stint reffing for the PGA, I got to spend quite a bit of time with him, either on the range or on the course, and we did a lot of work on me. And it reiterated that I was actually probably hitting it better than I thought.
Yeah.
And I was swinging it quite good. But it also probably took my mind off watching the scores, if you like, because it put me much more focused on what I was supposed to be doing. And it helped me massively, and I think I finished 12th, and I played with Brody last round, and we were both about 6 under after 15, and I 14 holes, I think it was, and I chucked a double in from on a drive wedge hole from nowhere, and I finished 12th, but was sort of delighted with myself for a 12th, you know, thing. Although I would have been in the top 10, absolutely confidence level went up again, if you like, and I came home and was still playing lovely, and said to Louise, A lot of people have told me who've been out to Moscow, to Russia, that it suited me. It was tree-lined and all the rest of it. Because, I mean, I grew up pro golf, certainly, at Omskirt, which is tree-lined. So yeah. I love tree-lined golf courses. And I just said to Louise, and I've never... I have done this in the past. I've said, there's a wind coming. Some, you know, I can tell when I'm trending. Most people can when it's they're getting nearer and nearer. And I just said, play like that, I think I'll have a good week. And now, in fairness, I was thinking, I reckon I could get a top 10 here.
Yeah.
Simon was saying, you'll win this year. And I'm, as much as I wanted to believe it, I didn't want to think about that. I just thought, if I could throw a top 10 in, thought it'd be brilliant now. And as it happened, I ended up getting drawn last group with Phil Price and Stephen Dodd, who were both mates anyway, which yeah. helped me really.
Yeah,
you know, because they're such great lads, and I know they've had stellar careers and all the rest of it. And Pricey's rider cupped it and all the rest.
Yeah,
but he's Pricey to me, and Doddy's the same. So it's I wasn't transfixed with one playing with him because I knew him. And I just set off straight from the get go on the last round. I said it lovely, and I knew after that. Well, I'm not going to say I knew. I felt like after 9 holes I was going to win. And yeah, as it happened, you know, I did. But it was, I parred my way in. So, you know, they might argue that they probably didn't really play that good on the back nine. But it was funny. Felt very, very calm and just very relaxed. I know it's strange, very, very relaxed. But that was the biggest sort of change in everything. I think it came on the back of the, as I say, the tournament before.
Yeah,
but suddenly became very comfortable with what me and Simon had worked on, and the fact that under the gun, you know, the most pressure I've probably ever been in.
Yeah,
it just everything felt so simple, and it was that was it. Then it was just right. Where do we go from here? Because all of a sudden, from trying to probably have a goal in my mind of thinking I'd love to keep my card and get another year out of it. Suddenly it was, crikey, I could get near the top 10 here, you know, and everything, your parameters, you know, your expectations and everything changed. But after, I don't know, 10 or 12 events in or something, you can look at, that's the other thing, you can look at the stats and look at your results, you know, which, and, it had things like your average position and all the rest. And, you know, I thought, yeah, you know what? If I'm playing average, I'm making top 20 nearly. You know, I play pretty poor, not too here in my mind. So it's just confidence, little triggers that just, you know, and I think the more little triggers like that, they're like sort of comfort blankets when something isn't going right. So, you know, you might start, there,
yeah.
I can't think of one off the top of my head, but where you maybe be one or two over after, you know, four or five holes of the first round, you know, and I may well have sort of gone, oh, crikey, I'm in trouble here. I don't do things like that. It's like, well, I'll get it back.
Yeah.
You
change the complex of it, yeah.
Yeah, and I was delighted to finish 11th in the end. You know, I had a good week at Woburn when Streets won. Funny enough, I said to him, because we have all our practice rounds, me and Paul Streeter, and I said to him, if I can do it, you can, because he hits it just as good. He's brilliant. And sure enough, he went and won there. But and I finished fifth. And then he won again in Benidorm, and I finished third. And we were both flying, and ended up being made top 10, and I finished 11th. And it was just, everyone was sort of saying, oh, you've missed the US Senior Open by one. But I just said, well, I'll be honest with you, if someone said that's going to be the low point or the disappointment of my first season on the tour, I'll take it. You know, I was made up.
Yeah.
You know,
when you look at that seniors tour now, I've started watching it. When I used to do loads of work at Wentworth, like through college and stuff, and the household names that were there at Wentworth, like your Darren Clarks, your...
yeah.
Who else was there? They're all on it, aren't they? It's not like they're messing around, are they?
Yeah, no, they're not. No, not at all. I mean, as I say, I mean, the Champions Tour out there, you know, they've got a lot more money behind it and everything else. So that's the golden ticket as far as they're concerned, if you like. But, I mean, even on ours, you know, I mean, as I say, I played with him, and I played, you know, I mean, knock around a bit with Woozy, and Monty's played in a few, you know, and I mean, I've got friendly with so many of them now, you know, who I've watched in Ryder Cups, and this, you know, some of my best mates are now Ryder Cup players, and you know, it's totally bizarre, but as I was saying before, once you sort of get away from, oh, here's such and such, oh, here's, oh, there's somebody else, I don't really get sort of awestruck anymore, because they're just normal people, you know, and they're all pretty decent, you know, they're good lads, and a lot of them like my story, as it were, you know, from, because I've come from the other side of it, if you like, you know, I was never on tour, a lot of them like that, you know, I mean, I had Dave Frost, you know, he called me and said, come and have a drink at the bar and tell me your story, you know, and that's how we've ended up being, you know, we always have a good laugh with him, you know, and that's why I played with him out in Morocco, and, you know, end up sitting in the welcome evening before the week started, and I was sat with him, Bernard Langer, Chief Goose, and but just chatting away, you know.
Yeah.
You know, part of me thinks, oh, should I get my phone out here?
You're still a fan in the back of your mind, aren't you?
Well, I am. Yeah, I am, and I wouldn't ever not want to be. You know, it's quite bizarre, and to just sit and talk to them. And you know, I got to play Austria last year. I played with Paul Laurie. You know, Paul's lovely. You know, and virtually everywhere you look, even on ours. You know, I watched him win that. I remember when he won that. You know. But it's great. I mean, to be able to have that opportunity for me, you know, people sort of say you're living the dream, you know, but I am.
It's amazing,
know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's better than the dream because I'm winning.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You've done that in 2018, and now you're around all these like household names that you've watched growing up and stuff. Do you reckon that's elevated your game then into 2019, where you've obviously had a couple of wins again?
I think again, it's probably just reinforcing the belief that, you know what, yeah, I'm good enough here. You know, because as I say, I didn't really have that many goes at the tour. And, you know, you think, oh, how good was he in his career and what are you wanting and this, that and the other. But at the end of the day, when you put that tee in the ground on the first tee, you're all playing that golf course the same, aren't you? You know, so you never really know. But if you keep having, you know, relative successes, if you don't take confidence from it, you'd be a fool.
Yeah.
But the thing, I'm just careful that I take confidence from it and don't become arrogant with it, if you like. You know, I mean, I love nothing more. And that's been the one sort of, what's the word, consolation to not being able to play this year, was the fact that I went back to Wormskirk and I do my practice down there, and I've been playing with the lads down there, you know, any day I can get out there, sometimes twice.
Yeah.
You know, and I love playing for a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
I still try and absolutely beat the brains in for a cup of coffee. You know, it keeps me competitive, and you know, they put me off a dodgy handicap, I think, half the time, but it makes me try even harder. Just think, I'll show you, you know. But I will constant. I love playing golf. That's the thing, you know.
Yeah.
That is the top and bottom of it, and so I was delighted to go and do what I did again this, you know, last year, as it were. It was funny. It was a very similar sort of pattern to the year, if you like. Although I had finished quite well in Italy. I finished third in Italy, and I played absolutely awful. I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. And I genuinely mean no idea whatsoever. Roger Chapman came on the range one morning, and he said, we were having a spread bet as to how many balls you've hit this week. Because I was as soon as it come daylight, I was just desperately trying to find something. And it's stupid, really, because all I had to do was ring Simon up and video it and something. He'd probably sort me out, but for whatever reason, I just didn't. And I fought myself all week, and then finished with like five birdies or four birdies or something, the last six or seven holes, and all of a sudden I was third. And I did it a couple of times earlier doors, and again thought, well, you know, you must be pretty good here if you really do. You know, I wasn't trying to be arrogant by saying I'm playing crap.
Yeah.
And I finished fifth or what have you, you know. And I tried some new irons. That was another thing, which was a bad idea. And I put my old ones back in, and we went to Spain, to Catalonia, which I love. Played a few pro-ams there, PGA Catalonia, great golf course. But I was still it really didn't have a clue. And I went chipping late on. Again, only me there. And I was down by the chipping green, and Woozy come wandering over doing a bit of chipping. He was just having a chat, and he just said, "Have a go at this wedge." And I said, "Oh, I don't like that." You know, and you know, I think to myself, imagine if someone said to you, "You're going to tell me thinking wedge is horrible." But I did. So I don't like that. Oh, I've been bending it. I said, "What are you doing?" Anyway, he loves golf and he loves tinkering with his stuff. You know, it's amazing to think where he's been in the world of golf, and he's still the same. He still loves it. And anyway, I tried the other one, and he said, "How are you trying to play that?" And all of a sudden, it turned into him giving me short game lesson. And "Did you mind if I video what you're doing?" And he's like, yeah. I said, "I won't put it on anything, but I've got it on my phone." And it's like, "Yeah, look at this." And he ended up, I just said, "Oh," I said, "Listen, thanks. I really appreciate that. You know, how good's that? You know,
unbelievable.
You do some chipping, you ended up giving me a chipping lesson." And, you know, he then said, I said, I'll need that. You know, he said, "Are you still struggling?" I said, "Yeah." "Well, how far did you hit that club?" And we wandered down with pockets of golf balls and ate some shots. And he went, "Try this." Anyway, when I said, "Listen, thanks very much." He went back to the hotel, had something to eat, got up, hit some balls, and went out and shot 500, leading by 2 first round. The next morning, I was on the range with Pete Baker. And he just, as I walked down there, he said, "Have you seen him?" I said, "No." He said, "He's looking for you."
Some money off you.
Once is payday.
Come on. But he's a brilliant crack, like, you know, and he's funny enough, I spent a bit of time with him back end of this summer. He gave us a little look at me putting him on every view. But it's just a genuine great guy, you know, and it's funny, you watch stuff, you know, this week you'll see the highlights of him holding the winning putt and all this, and you know, they're the moments where you think, "God, I'm so lucky to be able to..."
Pinch yourself moments, yeah.
So it's nice that you're talking like a fan, even though you've won on tour and you're beating these guys, but you're still talking like a fan because you've just come to that level, haven't you? These have been with each other for years, haven't they?
Yeah, I am. I mean, listen, don't get me wrong. You come across one or two of them, if they're a bit, you know, up themselves, a bit arrogant, not really forth, you know, just a simple hello and a pleasant sort of what have you.
Yeah.
If they don't do that, I'm not interested in them. You know, yeah. I wouldn't try and be friendly with somebody just because of who they were.
If they're
not my kind of person, or they're a bit, you know, guess, you know, you knew who I am type thing, I won't bother with them. But there's very, very few of them are like that, particularly, you know, in the senior golf as well. They've done it all before, you know, they've been doing it for a long, long time. They're a bit more laid back.
Yeah.
So it's that's the greatest thing about it. You know, through the years being at Wentworth or in an Open and what have you, there's not that many that you'll really get more than a sort of, you know, all right, you know.
Yeah.
But listen, that's not what that's about. Well, of course they are, you know. I mean, they don't know who I am playing in one of them. You know, they might never ever see me ever again, you know. But, you know, on the tour, we see them, you know, they don't all play every week, but when they do, they come over, they have a chat, have a bit of a laugh, and they follow the weeks when they're not playing. They know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because a mate of mine, Ash, took a photo of me putting next to Monty, and we'd been chatting about the footy, and he sent me some photos. So I can't remember what I put on Twitter. I put something on. I can't remember what it was. But I just put, just for a laugh, I just put, "I can't believe Monty wasn't watching," because he was looking the other way when I was on the photo. This said, "I can't believe Monty wasn't trying to pick up a few tips off me putting." Anyway, not for a second thinking that he would see it.
Yeah,
and next thing, Dink, Colin Montgomery, like, I thought, "Oh no!" I went down for breakfast the next morning. He was just, "Yeah." I thought,
I see it, yeah.
But I mean, you know, he's great. He comes over as a chat, really nice fella, you know, an hell of a golfer, obviously. But little things that you remember, you know. Gary Player sending the message when I won in Russia. It's just,
Unbelievable.
I just sat one night and my phone pinged and he just said, Gary, player followed you. And I thought, I went running into him. I said, look at this. I said, it's got to be a wind-up. It's got to be a wind-up. And then within a few minutes or whatever it would have been, he sent the message saying, congratulations, you know, blah, blah, blah. Amazing.
It's unbelievable. You know,
Yeah. So, I mean, there are little things I've got kept on my phone, you know. But it's funny, a mate of mine who I play with a lot, this, you know, there's a bunch of us that play at Ormskirk, and I play a lot with John Rimmer and Ian Mason. Ian Mason's big Woosie fan. He's one of his main heroes, as it were.
Yeah.
And I got Woosie did a little video message, a little bit of a Mickey take on him.
Billions.
At the back end of this summer, you know. And that's the kind of thing, you know, you wouldn't dream. I wouldn't have dreamt of asking anybody to do anything like that, you know, at the Open or anything like this. But our tour's a little bit more laid back, and you know, we have a chat and we have a crack and we'll have a drink, and that's why it's just such a joy to play in it, you know, because they're all so good.
So yeah. what does that give you now then? So you won once in 2018 and twice in 2019. What type of exemptions have you got on the tour now?
Well, not a lot really. You get 12 months from the day you won. That's it.
Oh, is it?
Mm. Yeah.
Surprising.
But did you finish in, obviously you hit form in September, didn't you? Because you won twice in a month there, didn't you?
Simon came down to Hanbury Manor.
Are you not starting to think like you should be bringing Simon to every event? Because there seems to be a trend going here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He came down on the Pro-Am day. He brought his son Ollie down, and he basically, we had about between two and three hours on the range, and then he walked round while I played in the Pro-Am, and then he went home. Funny enough, he's told me since, obviously, he said to Ollie in the car, if he plays like that, he'll win this week. And I was playing well, and funny enough, the year prior at Hanbury, I felt like I was going to win it, and I just backed off it a little bit, and yeah, played lovely, and Pricey helped me out by throwing a, God knows what number he made on 17, whatever it was, about an 8 or a 9 or something. But I was playing great, and then we had a week off, and then I went to Paris and sort of freewheeled it a bit, really. But I putted so good, and the greens were treacherous, fast, slopey.
Yeah.
And I just got the pace of them straight away, and I knew I was swinging it good. And funny enough, Street said, I knew you were going to go near, because in practice I was hitting it lovely. And yeah, that was lovely, because I managed to pit John Remsey in a playoff, and obviously all the friends were supporting him.
Yeah, I'd imagine. Yeah.
So that was nice. I mean, he was good about it. He's great player. But yeah, that was lovely to sort of, I'd won one coming from like Russia. I was behind him. And then Hanbury, I was sort of up there, and then I managed one in a playoff. So I've done it always up, really. So
yeah.
Was that your first playoff since the 2017 loss in a playoff? Yeah,
it was. Well, yeah, funny enough, 18th hole is it's par five, but you've got to, I draw it, and you've got to sort of flirt with this bank of trees, and it just drops off to the right, and there's OB down there. But it basically, fairway goes that way, and there's trees, and it goes round and up the hill to this back. So I couldn't see a way of getting it in the right half of the fairway, because if I hit it, it went down into the left, and I was behind the trees. So I was struggling to get up on two. And I'd upped it left in normal play with a 3-wood, and then had to snap up a 7-iron and made a 5. So we went down for the playoff, and I remember standing on the tee thinking, what am I going to do? And I just thought, well, I'm going to hit driver. I hadn't hit driver all week. And I just tried to hit a block as near to the trees as I could, and managed to get it in play. And Jeff hit it in the trees, left where I did it on the 18th in normal play.
Yeah.
So I knew he was in trouble there. And I just laid it up near the front of the green, because there was OB at the back. I thought, I'll just get it to there and see what he does. And he was still in the trees after two or three, I can't remember. So it ended up five was good enough to win it. But yeah, there was another one. I just thought, well, yeah, look, you've won the other week. You're going to need a birdie probably to win it. You know, get the driver out and have a go. So I did. But it's funny, sort of clear, the clarity when you see it, it's strange because, you know, you've all been there when you're standing there saying, I don't want to go over here, I don't want to go over there. When you,
most, you know, most tees for me, though.
Well, when you're not playing well, you see rubbish, don't you? You see everything. You know, yeah. It's funny, I remember years and years ago, saw an article in a golf magazine, and it was two, open it out, it was the same, it was a golf hole, a picture of a golf hole, same hole. And on the left-hand side, the fairway was in black and white, and all the trees and the bunkers and everything were in colour. And then the other page, the fairway was green and everything else was in black and white. And it was basically the two views that you'll have when you know what you're doing and when you're struggling.
Yeah.
And I never forgot that. And it is, you see things clear. You know, you're never going to hit a shot, a good one, if you're thinking, I don't want to do that.
Yeah. No.
Don't want to go left. You've got to eliminate and get a positive. Even if it's not the most positive you'll ever be, I'm going to hit it to there. Or I'm going to, you know, there are certain times you just think, well, you know what? If as much as I can, I will try to never hit a shot if I'm not comfortable with it.
Yeah.
And if that means laying up on a par five, I'll lay up.
What our problem is, though, we think positively and then we do it and it goes nowhere near where we want it to go. So then the more times you do that, the less confidence you get.
Well, yeah, it's funny. Way years back at Ormskirk when I used to teach, I used to do quite a lot. We used to take people out of the golf course and just say, hit it over there then. If you can't reach from here, get a 5-iron and hit it over here. But now you've got that. So now you've got a par three from 60 yards or 40 yards, you know what I mean? That kind of thing. And it's like, it's course management, isn't it?
Yeah,
but it is. Obviously, when you get in to a point where you haven't got shots to play with, there are going to be occasions, yeah, right, I'll take that on. Funny enough, Russia, the 17th hole in the last round, was a par five that went over the hill and it ran off to the right into a lake, and the lake went all the way up round by the green. And Doddy got up there and hit a driver and pushed it, and I thought, well, that's in the water. So I was going to hit 4-iron, and I changed my mind and hit a 5-wood because I knew I couldn't reach any of the trouble.
Yeah,
and Pranky hit a really good one, and I stood there, and when I got there, because it had caught the slope, I could actually reach, and I just thought, no, I'm going to hit 8-iron. I'm not happy with that. And as it happened, he made his 4, and I made a 5, and I had a 1-shot lead up the last and managed to get over the line with a par. But it was just having that sort of, I don't want to hit that shot.
Yeah,
I don't think I'll be comfortable if I do, so I won't. You know, I'll take my chance. And again, sort of seeing it clearly and thinking, right, if you're not happy, what's the chances that you're going to hit your Sunday best?
Yeah.
There's times when you've got to go.
Yeah.
So there are, definitely, but at the same time, there are other occasions where you've hit shots and you think, oh, I knew I was going to do that.
Yeah.
And you think, well, why have I done it? You know, how many times have you stood over a 3-footer? You miss it, you go, I knew I was going to do that.
Yeah.
But you won't walk away. I do it, you know, and it's the most infuriating thing.
It's the most frustrating thing about golf in general, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, listen, you do see people that back off shots left, right and centre. They do it as a bloody pre-shot routine and they're painful to watch. And part of me thinks, you know, I never want to get in the habit of doing that because I wouldn't want to play with someone that does that on every flipping shot, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
But at the same time, there are occasions you think, yeah, I need to walk away and start again here.
Yeah.
And sometimes you get in a mental state where you do that, but most of the time you don't. You say, I'll be all right.
Yeah.
I, you know, feel like I'm aiming right. I'll just pull this. We've all done
it. Yeah, definitely.
I'll all do it again, including myself.
100%, 100%, yeah.
Speaking about doing it again, what is the plans going forward?
Well, we've... quite interesting. They've rebranded as the Legends Tour now, sort of making more of some of the names that are up there, and you know, rightly so. So they are legends of the game, you know. But the other thing being, they're offering like the amateurs decide to experience what it is like for us. You can buy a package onto it now, and you play within the tournament with pros as your partners as well. Order of merit, all the rest of it. Stay in the same hotels, travel, get picked up. You know, all the rest of the ranges that are, so they're doing a lot for the amateur side of it to get them involved in it as well, and hopefully to, you know, raise the profile and raise the prize funds and everything. And our rankings, basically, like all the others, the other tours have carried over. So, as you know, as hard as it has been to not get a club in my hand at all, I mean, that's been difficult watching them all playing all these various different tours, you know, and seemingly sort of not, I don't recall very many times hearing anybody on TV sort of saying, yeah, it's a shame for the seniors, you know, we're the only tour that's not started, no. You know.
Is that like the age, like vulnerability or whatever, or what?
Probably, yeah. I think that was an underlying thing. Obviously, we're all over 50, aren't we, for starters? Mm-hmm. It's, you know, logistically, it's a difficult thing to do. And obviously, when the main tour started off, funny enough, they used Hanbury, they used Saint-Pierre, Forest of Arden, sorry. Everywhere had hotel on site so they could create their own bubble. You know, the thing being, we'd go to some lovely places with some lovely hotels that are on site, but of course, you've then got to convince that hotel that they've got to create a bubble for us. So how do they do that?
Yeah.
I mean, as it happened, no one was traveling hardly anyway, you know, so it's an expensive thing to set up and, you know, it's not been great just having to watch it, but at the same time, we're waiting for next year, and obviously, with where I finished, I'll get the US Senior Open, the US PGA.
Brilliant.
And obviously, our Open, I'm glad they've rescheduled back at Sunningdale, because obviously, that's a great track, isn't it? The two US ones, which one it is now, is at Mission Hills, which is also a top venue. And of course, the Legends, the championship is going to be at Formby, which is perfect for me.
That's brilliant. Yeah, we'll definitely be down to watch, mate, 100%.
Yeah, well, I think it'll be good. I think, I don't know for sure, don't quote me on this, but I know the last couple of years Monty's played, and Ollie's played, Jose Maria Elizabeth's played a few times, well, more than a few. And of course, they played the amateur final there, didn't they? So I think that might be a good thing if you get the pair of them playing.
So it'd be
great. I mean, what a venue as well. And right up the road for me. Perfect.
It'll be perfect, yeah.
It'd be exciting. So I think they're going to, back end of this month probably, I think there's going to be some more info on what kind of a schedule we're going to have. I think it'll go public not long after we find out, I think, at the end of this month probably. So,
what are you going to try and play as much as you can, are you?
Yeah, I'll play in everything, absolutely, yeah. I mean, funny enough, this year I'd have got in I think top 10 gets a Japanese PGA championship as well, senior one. Yeah, but obviously that wasn't possible. We couldn't go there either.
Yeah.
So, where did you actually finish last year?
Third, I was.
Oh, was you? Yeah, quality.
Yeah, so it was, Pricey just played great all year, so he was hard to catch, but it was, amazing, really. Yeah, but it's funny, you know, a guy said to me, John Walters, it was, said to me, your second year is going to always your best. And I said to him, I'll have to go something to beat 11th.
Yeah.
You know, and as it happened, I did. But I'm just going to go with the flow and see where we get to and keep doing the same things, really.
So obviously you're on the seniors now, it's for 20, as it'll be 2021. Yeah. Is there any way of you getting, if you win or you win the whole thing, like on a European tour event or into any of the majors?
Let me get this right now. I think the US PGA seniors champion gets in the US PGA. Don't quote me on that, but I think.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to go somewhere. I mean, you know, that's stellar. I mean, I say Oak Hill last year, it's just a who's who, you know, incredible.
Yeah.
Sitting in that clubhouse watching it.
As you know now, they're just humans. You turn up there, beat them.
Well, they are. Yeah, exactly.
In the Masters.
I mean, it's a stressful question, actually. I don't know if there's any kind of exemptions for it. Maybe the senior, is that getting something? I'm not sure.
We'll have a look into it anyway, because it'd be interesting to. We're not obviously going to follow your path anyway, but probably better for you don't know.
I'll let you know if I win one.
Yeah,
I won't talk to you. Don't worry, I'll go on the big side of a winner, mate.
Brilliant. No, well, look, best of luck to you, mate. It's been great to hear your journey, being great to see where you've got to now. It's unbelievable stuff, and we honestly wish you the best of luck. next year.
That's been good. Enjoyed it.
We're going to have a Bogey Boys golf day next year if you fancy playing in it. I'll just put something
on. Let me know.
Yeah. Be somewhere local. SNA, Formby or Formby, somewhere like that.
Yeah, well, that's easy for me. I'm close, so definitely. Let me know if I'm around.
Hey, another thing, I've never heard the term beating someone's brains in when talking about golf, but I can't wait to beat Mark's brains in next time I play with him.
No, honestly, mate, the pleasure was all ours. I appreciate you taking the time to speak to us.
Thanks for taking your time, David. Thank you very much.
No problem at all, boys.
Thanks a lot, mate. You take care. Yeah, all right. Catch you soon. Take care, mate.
Ta-da.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, oh boy, is he out of sync.